All right, welcome everyone to the inaugural podcast of the Football Burners podcast. My name is Brandon.
And my name is Matt.
And we are two brothers that listen to a lot of podcasts and really just wanted to start our own because we thought that there's a opportunity to talk about sort of our league and some of the differences that we bring that our league brings to the table, but also just kind of over the years of the different formats that we've played in, maybe talk a little bit about our strategies, rankings, things like that, and then also just having some fun talking about things outside of fantasy football and some of the things that we like that hopefully other fantasy footballers like as well.
I think we'll layer in a little bit of analytics. We'll layer in some deep dive stats for you guys just to kind of chew on. We'll also have some various tidbits of roasting that we'll do on some of our league mates just to make it a little more personal and a little more in depth so that you guys can understand who we might have on in the future as some guest appearances, to make it a little more upbeat and fun. So again, just to reiterate what Brandon had said, our goal with this is not to, win the world. The goal is to have some fun, put something out there that everybody can kind of engage with and hopefully relate to.
So to kind of kick things off, I suppose for this first episode, Matt, what do we have in store? What are some of the things that we want to talk about?
So I thought today, just to have a nice open discussion on a couple different things, I've got a few fun tidbits about some tight end scoring, which is not always the most intriguing thing to talk about, but can win you a league and can lose you a league pretty easily if you're always trying to stream and you're always off on that specific tight end. Or do you go with the strategy of, select big three or four tight ends that are out there and kind of. We'll talk about some tight ends.
Yeah, so jumping into, do we want to just jump into the tight end conversation, Matt?
Yeah, we can do that.
So I think
Yeah,
this
go ahead.
year, yeah, so I think this year with tight end, it's really interesting. There's a couple strategies, right? And I think you talked about it a little bit. You can go all in with sort of the pseudo top three. And I think there's pretty much a consensus, right, of who the top three are. You've got Kelsey and Kittle at the top two, and then you've also got Mark Andrews, right? Mark Andrews is one of those, he's gonna be a sneaky one this year that I think, for single, if you're doing a redraft, I think redraft is that might be your best bang for your buck tight end pick that you can get. Kelsey, top tight end for the past, what, 3 years in a row, maybe more. He's getting up there in age, but there's nothing out there that says Kansas City isn't going to have one of the best, if not the best, offense again, in the league. So it makes sense that Kelsey is going to be, drafted as the first tight end, but it's really a, in redraft especially, and in dynasty, Kelsey's 30 plus years old. So from a dynasty perspective, he's not a great buy in my opinion, just because you have to give up so much for him. Then you've got George Kittle at two. I think that's pretty clear. He could arguably could be the number one. I think on a per game basis last year he was the number one tight end, but of course he didn't play all 16. And then with Mark Andrews, like I said, I think he's probably your clear number three. Then there the field gets wide open.
I think we're going to disagree on a clear number three there. So if you actually look at the tight end position in total for Philadelphia, and let's remember that Philadelphia they were the 30th best wide receiver core as far as fantasy scoring and full PPR format last year, and they didn't do anything to address that. They probably actually, I mean, Alshon actually contributed last year, and he's going to start the year on the PUP this year.
Yeah.
So he's out. DeSean Jackson is a million years old, so he's not going to play more than six games this year, so he doesn't really add much there. Jalen Reagor, who I have in the Dynasty League, I'm pretty high on him, but we have to remember Philadelphia as a total group was the number one scoring tight end group in the league. Zach Ertz had something like 134 targets last year, and Dallas Goedert also had another 84 to 90 targets. So if we extrapolate that out and just say, there's some regression in Goddard and some uptick in Ertz, that's easily, he could turn into 155 targets pretty easily. That's two targets a game, that going the other way. And if that's the case, or one and a quarter, one and a half targets a game. And if that's the case, if Ertz gets to 155, 158 targets on the year, which he did the year prior, which made him, I believe, the number two tight end that year. If he gets to that, I don't think in Baltimore's limited passing offense, right? You've got somebody in Carson Wentz who threw 607 passes last year, I believe, and somebody in Lamar Jackson who is the up and coming quarterback, probably behind Mahomes, but he's a running quarterback. He's not going to throw more than 525 passes, and that would be super generous. He's probably going to throw 425 passes, and now you've got the emergence of Marquise Brown, who is going to be healthy this year, hopefully. Also in my dynasty league, they also added Devin Duvernay, who's a true slot receiver who had 106 catches last year for the Texas Longhorns, and he's a monster. He's a 6 foot, 210 pound slot receiver with biceps that look like anacondas. I mean, it's insane. The guy's going, he's going to show out. And if, I mean, you start dicing up the targets, and that puts Andrews at maybe 100 targets. If he gets 100 targets, I'm going to be really surprised. And that efficiency number, if you look at, Jackson's touchdown efficiency is going to come way down. I think he threw a touchdown pass on like 9% of his throws last year, and that's not going to happen this year. I mean, Aaron Rodgers' best seasons were at around 8%. So a 9%, that's showing some regression back to the mean. He's going to fall back to kind of where everybody else is at. So I just don't. I'm significantly more bullish on the Philadelphia tight end group than I am
Let's talk that then, though. So are you high on the group or are you high on Ertz? Right? Because Goddard's still there. So. And if you look at their yards per reception, they were both within 0.06 per attempt or per reception of each other, right? You've got Ertz at 10.41 and you've got Goddard at 10.47. They were 2 to 3 yards lower than everyone else in that top group. Jared Cook was at, which I don't know if anybody's got him kind of repeating his 16.4, yards per reception, but you've got Kelsey at almost 13. You've got Kittle at 12.5. You've got Mark Andrews at 13.3. Who do you see leading the pack there? Because it's not about the tight end core. It's about the tight end. So I think you're probably high on Ertz, right? But
correct.
By how much?
We can buy a, by a decently significant margin. I mean, everybody's saying that, well, Hayden Hurst is gone, right? Yes, Dallas Goedert is still in Philadelphia. Their wide receiver core didn't change, so they're still going to be terrible at wide receiver. So if we just hold the target total for last year for Philadelphia, there was 222 targets that went to tight ends for Philadelphia last year. Sorry, Joshua Perkins also had 13 targets. So that brings the total number to 235 targets to tight ends in Philadelphia last year. Ertz saw 135 of that. He saw well over half of that. So even if he just holds to his current, if he holds to that pace, not even go back to his 2019 levels or his 2018 levels, which were outrageous. If he just stays close to 135, he's going to outpace Mark Andrews, because that means he's going to catch 90 passes. And Mark Andrews had 98 targets last year. How much can that really go up Right, but that's okay. So the argument is Hayden Hurst
Hurst
is
is
now
gone.
gone. Hayden Hurst had 40 targets. Nick Boyle
Yeah,
had 40 targets. So there's 80 there. Okay, so maybe he eats into 40 of that. Okay, now he's on the same target pace as Zach Ertz. And again, you're if what drove Mark Andrews last year was he had 10 touchdowns versus Zach Ertz having 6. Well, Dallas Goedert also had 5, where Hayden Hurst had 2 and Nick Boyle had 2. So do we, it's really how much do you think that Lamar Jackson throwing, what did he throw, 32 or 36 passing touchdowns last year? Do you think he's going to repeat that? Because if not, then that touchdown total has to come down because you're, again, the wide receiver core in Baltimore got better. His passing attempts aren't going to go up. So you have to slice and dice that same pie across those same people. So.
I think there's an argument made for Jackson's passing to go up. I think you're going to see him run less and pass more. I think you're right on the touchdown regression. I think we are going to see less touchdowns from him from in the air, but I think there's going to be more passing opportunities. There's going to be healthier receivers, so they're not going to have to rely on him as much. I would think that the coaching staff is going to look at history and say, Lamar can't do this for 10 years, right? If you look at Michael Vick's injuries over the, and I know we're not talking about quarterbacks, but quarterback play obviously affects our tight end play. So, the quarterback, if you look at Michael Vick's history, who is the closest comparison we have to Lamar Jackson, he was constantly beaten up, right? RG3 is another good example of that running style quarterback that after a few years gets a major injury and can't do the same thing that he can anymore. I'm not saying that's what Lamar Jackson is profiling, but you would think the coaching staff would look at that and say, we've got to think of a way. And I think they did with the draft, right? So kind of getting back to that, I think with the departure of Hayden Hurst, who helped kind of rob some of that. And if you look at the efficiencies too, all three of the wide receivers that were in the mix last year for Baltimore, you had Mark Andrews, you had Hayden Hurst, and you had Nick Boyle. Combined, they had 180 targets, and they all averaged right around, well, you look at Hayden Hurst and Nick Boyle, 11.63 and 10.35. So still double digit per, yards per reception for both of them. Mark Andrews did get to, benefit more than the other two from a touchdown perspective, but there were 14 touchdowns to go around between them. There will be that regression from Lamar in the air from a touchdown perspective, but I think the receptions are going to go up for Mark Andrews, and I think the efficiencies can still be there. Maybe not at the same level, the 13 yards plus per, but I think you're going to see, 12. I think you're definitely going to see 12 yards per reception
Yeah.
for him easily.
Yeah. So I think that's where, right, we're in a 3A, 3B type of conversation where you, right, we use the word think and should and probably will with Mark Andrews, where, right, we are taking that guess that he's that tight end to make that next leap. We already know that Ertz is there. So you can play the upside with Andrew. And this is, right, this is a preference here, and this is probably where you're at in your draft too, ADP wise. You're going to have to draft up for Mark Andrews. Andrews is going off the board before Ertz is in standard redraft leagues with 12 teams. You're getting Andrews in like the third round. You're getting him close to right the middle to late third round, and you're getting Ertz, at the beginning of the fourth. So you have to pay up a little bit in redraft for Andrews right now, and I have to check that ADP, but I think that's kind of where they're at right now. So it's really, do you want the safety of Ertz, of knowing that you're going to have that target share? He's got that rapport with Carson Wentz already, or do you want to take that upside play and see if Mark Andrews can be that next Kittle? He's not going to be the next Kelce. There probably won't be another Kelce for a while. That guy's a freak, and apparently he's going to play till he's 36. Because that's as long as the Chiefs just signed him on the big extension through. But it's really, you have to weigh the, and that's right, an overall fantasy football strategy. Do you project upside, or do you go with safe play? And a lot of that's roster construction. A lot of that is, how What is your threshold for, it's like investing in a stock. What's your threshold of risk, right? What do you want to be more risky and have that upside, or do you want to play it safe and know you're going to get a 6% return on investment? That's kind of the way that I see those two players. And it's right, it's six in one hand, half dozen the other. So.
Yeah, I'm thinking back through, right? Ertz has a little bit of an injury history too. So I mean, thinking through dynasty play, I'm a little hesitant on him. I'm not, overall Mark Andrews, I'm not sure his full injury history from a dynasty perspective, right? And I think you're right. I think it's looking at what is the top end potential for the group, right? And Kelsey's, as you said, is otherworldly. No one's going to get to that repeatable year after year after year. But who's got that one, one this year, top five next year, one or two the next year, right? Who can consistently stay in those top end groups? Kittle, I think Kittle's pretty easily in there. For me, it's Mark Andrews. I think he's got he's got the age. He's got sort of that. Baltimore sort of has that up and coming dynasty feel, like just with the way their offense is just so it's so explosive from multiple points. It's not just Lamar. Lamar is obviously the biggest piece of that, but their overall offense is just huge. You mentioned Marquise Brown. I almost regrettably traded him to you,
What do
I
you mean,
think he's gonna
almost?
have. I did trade him to you. I think I'm going to be regretting that. That's why I say almost regretting that. But the thing with Marquise Brown is, right, he's in his second year, he's up and coming. So that's again talking about the future and the dynasty of what Baltimore's going to be. I think Mark Andrews has that potential to have sort of that year after year production. Maybe not at number one, but definitely in the top. I feel like in the top three, repeatable, just because of the way the offense is set up. Philadelphia.
I just worry about passing volume. Passing volume is my main crux with that. I don't see they're building a defense. They went heavy on defense in the draft this year. Right, their first round pick was a linebacker. They're trying to build that defense back up because of the explosiveness of the Baltimore offense. I don't see the passing capacity that somebody like Philadelphia does. I mean, he's Doug Peterson's an Andy Reid guy. He's coming from that style of offense where they want to sling it around, they want to move it fast, they want to go fast. Baltimore has always they're a preeminent run team. So having the number one tight end, while it is Mark Andrews and he's a freak and he was a stud in college as well, and he's a beast of a I mean he's a big dude. I think he'll hold up really well. I just don't see the passing volume that will hold him. In that, I think he's going to have some wide receiver 14 years, and I think he's going to have some wide receiver 2 years. I think he's going to be all the way up and down because if that touchdown turns from 10 to 5, and it can turn to that overnight, right? And he only gets 100 targets and he catches 65 passes for 852 yards, then he becomes a mediocre tight end. He doesn't become that flash in the pan anymore. Now you get him cheaper, so now maybe he'll pop. I just don't like him where he's being drafted. I don't like him being drafted at 3. I'm
That's
good if you're getting, yeah, I'm good if you're, I'm good if you're getting him at tight end 5 value, where you're getting Ertz and then Waller, and then if somehow Mark Andrews slips down, or if you, I'm not paying a king's ransom for Mark Andrews to go out and get him in a dynasty league, and I'm not paying a ransom for Ertz either, and in that manner, with Kelsey getting locked up, you're paying a premium for Kelsey, and you're paying a premium for Kittle. And if we're talking tight ends, the rest of the way down the board, you're either going to stream them or you're going to find a guy that you might be able to hold on to for a year or two, and then you're just throwing darts. So.
Yeah, and that's fair, and I think we can move on from kind of this grouping. But that was sort of my first tier, right? It for me, it was Kelce, Kittle, and the end of that tier for me is Andrews. It sounds like maybe Ertz is in the is Ertz sort of in that tier for you,
Oh, for sure.
and
Yeah.
then, and then I think it's that second group that we start talking about. You mentioned Waller already. I think Tyler Higbee has opportunity in that group. What he showed in the last, what was it, five games for the Rams, where he was basically, if you extrapolate it out over 16 games, he's setting records.
Well,
I think
so is Austin. So is Austin
so is
Hooper if
Austin
you use
Hooper.
the first five
Yep.
games.
Yep, that's fair. I think that's what makes the second group kind of interesting, just because you have some of those guys that it's sort of I mean it's the boom or bust. That's absolutely what it is. And if you can get them to boom for 10 plus games, you've got a winner. But you gotta pick it right? So you've got Higbee, Hooper, Waller. Jared Cook maybe is in that conversation. I don't like him as much just because. I know New Orleans, now that he's in that situation, spreads the ball around a lot. But with Kamara hopefully at full strength next season, I think there's going to be less opportunity for the tight end to receive
Well, and
what
I
I
think
think people are expecting.
and I think his biggest factor is actually Taysom Hill. He's being designated as a utility player. They move him around. He's going to eat up some of those specialty looks that tight ends and scat backs traditionally get. I think he's probably the biggest impact on, and I'm super high on the New Orleans offense this year. But I'm not buying in. I'm not buying into New Orleans tight end.
I'm not either.
Question for you, question for you, and just as a quick note, so the number one, these are team stats for the tight end position, just to kind of wrap it all up here, just a food for thought. The first team, number one was Philly, two was Baltimore, three is New Orleans, and that's heavily weighted on Taysom Hill as well, because you can't really, there's nowhere to put him, so. If you look at, I believe Cook was maybe like the seventh or eighth tight end last year. So he's up there, but Taysom Hill really affects that a lot. Four was the Raiders, five was Kansas City, because Kelsey's the only one who catches passes besides the Blake Dozer or the Bell Dozer. Six was San Francisco, seven was the Rams. So there's your Higbee. Eight is Atlanta. So there's some Hayden Hurst love, right? He went over to Atlanta for a second round pick, I believe. So he could have some upside there. Nine was the Giants. That one actually surprised me. And I looked back at Evan Ingram's stats, and he actually
That
had a
couldn't have
pretty
been just
decent
a year.
one for no. And Rhett Ellison. I mean, if Evan Ingram can stay healthy for a full season, with Daniel Jones at quarterback, he's going to have a pretty decent year. And that wide receivers core is not that great. I don't want a lot of those guys. So I think Evan Ingram is probably the best athlete in that whole kind of group there. So he could have a big year. You want to guess who number 10 was?
Was it
So a
Dallas?
fringe, it was Dallas. A fringe number one tight end can come out of the Cowboys system. Jason Witten had 83 targets last year. I think we're underestimating the fact that when Dak Prescott throws the ball 500,000 times, some of those targets are going to go to a tight end. And I don't think CeeDee Lamb is going to take over all of those targets. I think CeeDee Lamb falls into the Randall Cobb targets. And I think Blake Jarwin is the tight end that can be that guy who jumps from the obscure, right? Kittle can jump from the obscure to be a top five tight end in the league. He's got the passing offense. He's got the athletic build for it. He's not a traditional blocking tight end, so he's going to be close to the line of scrimmage. He's going to be running routes. You're not going to have him in there doing a ton of blocking, and they're really going to spread it out now that Olawale was, opted out. They don't have a fullback. They don't have their traditional fullback that they have in there, so they're going to be spreading it out, and you're going to probably see four wide with CD, Amari, and Michael Gallup, with Blake Jarwin running seam routes down the middle. And when you have Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup running on the two outsides, the safeties are going to have to play two, cover two deep, and you're going to have Jarwin through the middle all day, every day. So I think he's the guy that, thankfully, I have him on my dynasty team, but in redraft, I'm going to be targeting Jarwin because he's basically free. You can get him at the, with your almost with your last pick. I mean, between him and Jonnu Smith, I don't know which exactly I'm going to go after. But I'm happy to get either one of those and plug them in there and let them eat and be a top seven or eight tight end all year.
Yeah, and Jonnu's an interesting one too. Let's stay on Jarwin, right? You think back, what was it, 2 seasons ago, his first or second game starting, and he scores what, four touchdowns in that game? Something
I think it was
crazy, right? Three
three against
touchdowns.
the Giants.
Yeah, he three touchdowns and some ridiculous receiving number as well, 130 plus yards or something crazy like that, right? Scored like 30 points at tight end. It was just insane. And I don't think, I think you hinted at it. He's the athlete that can take those receptions that Jason Witten, who has always been sort of that blanket drop off, the dump off for a Cowboys quarterback, whether it's Romo or Prescott, right? It's 8 yards down the field. He catches the ball in stride. Nobody's on him. He's got green pastures and gets taken out around, and gets like 16, 17 yards. Blake Jarwin isn't like that. He's a different type of runner. He's a different type of player. He can still provide that security for them, but he's also going to command coverage. Now, you got CeeDee Lamb, you got Amari Cooper, and you got Michael Gallup in the receiving core. And then you throw in the freak that Blake is as well. There's just not enough bodies on the defense to cover that. So yeah, I don't think all of those receptions that are lost with Witten moving over to the Raiders are going to go to CeeDee. I think that's going to be I think the vast majority of them, like you said, are going to move over to Blake. That comparison, or I suppose that question of him or Jonnu, I'm taking Blake every time. Jonnu Smith, I have no desire to really get anybody out of Tennessee. Tennessee is such a boring offense to me. They've got nothing to really offer, and I think that goes right along with the Titans as well. There's nothing really there as far as I'm concerned. Jonnu isn't really even on my draft board. There's so many tight ends that are going to be available, even in redraft, right? Like you said, you can take Blake with your last pick. There's probably three others that you can pick with your very last pick and be in that same tier. And then Jonnu's sort of at the end of that.
Where do you have Tannehill then?
I'm gonna have to pull up those stats. I don't have them as high as some, just because they just don't have they don't he doesn't do anything. What was his numbers from last year? Let's pull up his passing
He
stats.
was
He
the
was
he was the he was the number he was the number three scoring quarterback from weeks eight on.
Yeah, but you got to look at how many times he's okay. So he had. How many attempts as a whole did the team have? Yeah, Mariota and Tannehill both passing attempts for 446, right? That's pretty low, considering there's not much rushing to go along with it, right? So it's hard to get behind the receiving core of Tennessee because there's not enough opportunity.
Do you want to take a guess where Tennessee's total quarterback points scored were last year in relation to top to bottom, right? 1 to 32. What number were they? Quarterback scoring
As a team,
as a team. As a team, what you just said was Marcus Mariota was the cog that brought the wheel down, right? I think we can all agree to that.
yeah.
Marcus Mariota is a turd sandwich. So
But
they only got better.
Tannehill was just uber efficient, though. I don't think you keep that same efficiency. Like that's my point, right? You have the in order to increase the offense as a whole, and in order for Tannehill to remain a good option, his efficiencies are going to drop because he's going to have to do more, right? He's not going to be able to maintain his efficiency. So, but back to your question, where do I think they ranked as a whole? I'm gonna put him at ninth overall
That's
quarterback
close.
play. Seven. Okay. Yeah, I mean, again, it's the efficiency, right? Tannehill was super efficiency. When he threw the ball, What was his pass completions percentage? It was 201 out of 286. So, quick math.
I don't think you can take that efficiency away from him, though. The reason he is efficient is because they're running play action on what, 70% of their pass plays. He's not dropping back in five step drops. He's turning around, acting like he's handing the ball off to the man child, Derrick Henry,
Derrick
behind
Henry,
him,
yep.
and the defense is peeing down their leg, going, "How do I tackle this
Six foot
linebacker who's
three,
running at me?"
yep.
His efficiency is not due to him being, he's an accurate passer. The guy was on pace. I heard a stat the other day. He was on pace to break, if you looked at his stats alongside Dan Marino in Miami, everybody thinks he was just a terrible quarterback in Miami. The guy was not bad. He was actually really, really good, for a short time. Miami's a dumpster fire. It's the same thing as, everything that's coming out of Jets camp with Adam Gase. They've just had terrible front office things happen there that have derailed his career. And I think he's back on. I think Tannehill is, you don't go pay that guy how much Tennessee paid him to not be the guy and have all the faith and just turn the offense over to him. And again, they just signed Derrick Henry. If Derrick Henry gets hurt, yes, Tannehill becomes a significantly less good quarterback. If Derrick Henry is healthy, you can't take efficiency numbers away from his. That's like saying that Mark Andrews' efficiency is going to come down just due to the fact that he's getting increased volume. You can't make that correlation.
But
It's
70%.
right.
He was 70%. His pass percentage completion was 70%. That's not maintainable. Like it's just not. And I get what you're saying. I understand the argument. And the reason I say it's not maintainable is not because Tannehill's not a good quarterback. I think he is. I think he is a super efficient guy. He has looking at his weapons. He has one weapon. Right, that you can really make the argument for AJ Brown, right? Everyone else on that really,
Johnny
John.
Smith.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not that high on Jonnu. I think if you are, I think if somebody is high on him, save your pick till the very last pick. Like that's my advice. I think that's good advice if you're If you are high on Jonnu, save it for your last pick and pick him up. But I think that there's just so many more better opportunities out there. Like you said, Blake Jarwin. I would rather have Jarwin. Just because of the offense that they're in, the opportunity is there. Even if somebody gets hurt, right? Even if somebody gets hurt in Dallas, the opportunity is still there. If one person gets hurt on that offense in Tennessee, there's no opportunity. Or if Tannehill, for
Yeah.
whatever reason, decreases in his efficiencies even by a point, the opportunity completely goes away. Like that's it, there's such a small number available for what Tannehill did, right? For what he's going to do. Because like you said, it's play action, play action, play action. That's all that they're gonna run. And eventually that's gonna get figured out. But if Tannehill drops in efficiency even a little bit, that completely blows any opportunity that Jonnu has to become any type of weapon for that offense.
Yep, and it's just a coin flip for me. Again, I think it's right. We're in a different tier of player, but I think it's again, it's right. Take Mark Andrews if you want to, if you want to take the risk and have that, or take Ertz and have the safety of it. Again, both of these discussions that we've had are complete coin flips for me, because I could see Mark Andrews as being the number two tight end this year. I could also see him being the number seven or eight tight end this year pretty easily. Same thing with Jarwin and with Jonnu. You could see both of them fizzle out and be the number 24 tight end pretty easily. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility. But you could also see both of them be top eight. So it's volume. I think it's the same kind of argument, right? It's Jonnu doesn't have the volume that Jarwin is hopefully going to have, but neither of them are, but Jonnu is a little bit more of a proven commodity, as we saw last year, and Jarwin isn't. right? We've yet to see it from Jarwin, because Jason Witten had his big butt in the way for the last 2 years. So.
Yep. So, this is great conversation on tight end. I'm curious though, Matt, for you, where are you taking tight end? Like on a redraft? Let's think about redraft. Like, I mean, we know where we're at on Dynasty, and we can talk about that here in a second. But I'm curious to think of from a strategy perspective, who would you be trying to target for tight end?
It depends on where, right? It depends on where you're at. If I'm at the turn, or let's say I get the number one pick in a 12 team league in a redraft, you're going to go Christian McCaffrey.
Yep.
And if the turn comes back around and Kelce or Kittle are there at the 2-3 turn, you take them. And I've seen people that have loved, if it can happen, you could theoretically go, if it worked out that way, it depends on where Lamar and Mahomes go as well. You could start a 12-team redraft league with Christian McCaffrey and then Kittle or Kelce and Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes. And if you could have, in theory, one of the top two at each of those positions, minus the wide receiver now, then I think you do it because you have a clear advantage over every other team. At those positions. Now, if you're stuck at like the 5-6 pick in there, it's probably a lot like quarterback for me. I'm not going to go after anybody. And if you can't get one of the top four, and really, if you can't get one of the top two before round four, I'm probably not drafting a tight end until round 10. Like I'm going to wait forever, just like quarterback. I'm not going to draft a quarterback early, in a redraft, because you have such a larger premium on wide receiver and running back, on the wide receiver and running back position. So, I'm drafting those really late, and I'm probably going to draft two of these guys that we're talking about. I'm going to draft a Tyler Higbee, or I'm going to draft a Hayden Hurst, or I'm going to draft a Jarwin. Or to your point, there's just a huge tier of tight ends that you can either stream, or you can draft one of them and just plug them in for their opening season schedule and go, yep, I like these first three games. I think I'm going to be able to just plug them in for the first three, and then I'll stream after that. But you want to get off to a good start. So you want to look at that early season, with quarterback and with tight end if you're planning on streaming them. And hopefully you can get 2 or 3 good weeks out of those guys before you have to really start spending some of your fab dollars, and working through some of the free agent wire stuff. So.
Yeah, I think that matches up pretty well with me. With the I think you hit it right on the head with the 5 and 6 kind of position. I was in a redraft a couple weeks ago, and I ended up getting both Higbee and Hurst in very, very late pickups. I didn't even have an opportunity for Kelce or Kittle. Both of them were gone by the time it came back around to me, which was interesting. Which for me, right, when I'm looking at redraft, two running back, two wide receiver, and a flex. I'm running back heavy if I'm in the position to be able to do that. And that usually, it's weird when it falls like that. People see Kelce on the board, or they see Kittle on the board, and they think, I'm getting the number one in this position. Nobody can beat me. I think that the tight end grouping this year is super interesting, because I don't think there's going to be as much of a gap between the top two guys. There is that tier, right? There is that tier of those two guys. But I think that gap is going to shrink quite a bit this year. I think you're going to have about 8 to 9 guys that are going to be vying for that top, 3 to 5 spot. Right. And that gap right there between 3 and 5 is extremely shrunk from what I'm projecting out to that 1 and 2 spot. So from a
Well,
value perspective, you have a lot of opportunity within really the top 10 folks to just really, roll the dice, like you said. And tight end is that sort of flexible plug and play. The guy didn't do great for me for the first three games. Let me see what's going on the waiver wire.
and specifically speaking to our league as well, right? So our league is a dynasty full PPR. And if you look at Travis Kelce was 254 points last year. George Kittle was 222. Darren Waller was 221. Zach Ertz was 215. Mark Andrews was 207. So Austin Hooper was 191. So yeah, if you can find that next guy who's coming up, if you can find that next Austin Hooper, if you can find, you know, even Tyler Higbee, who really didn't do anything until late in the year, he was at 160 points. He was only 90 points off of Travis Kelce's pace,
right? Right.
So percentage wise, that's a pretty big jump. But if you can find that guy, and if you can just stream a couple of those guys, you're going to be significantly better off. Just because, right, in our league, Travis Kelce's 30, you know, he's 10% of a guy's salary cap. So we have salary caps in our league as well. So he's 10% of that guy's salary cap. Does 100 points in a single position where you can start one of them, or you can start two if you put the other tight end in a flex. But is that worth carrying 10%, where you're probably keeping yourself from also owning somebody like Lev Bell, or somebody like who else? Maybe Mark Ingram, right? You could have a guy that's in that position that can also give you flex appeal in a running back position or a wide receiver position that might have even larger upside, where you can just get, you know, two or three of these mid-tier tight ends and not spend as much towards your salary cap, and not have to pay that premium to get that one or two guy, right?
Yep. Yeah. To me, tight end is a lot like, you know, we talk about our league. Tight end for me, strategy wise, is a lot like our defensive side. So we have IDPs, right? Individual defensive players. So linebackers, right? A really good linebacker is worth maybe $8, right? From a salary cap. You might even go up into double digits if it's the number one, number two guy, right? It doesn't happen very often, but sometimes you just hang on to that guy because he scored you a ton of points last season. $34 for Travis Kelce, I get it. Not worth it to me, right? I picked up Evan Ingram from you, actually, after having him originally, I think, 2 years ago, but he came back around, right? I've got him for $11. If he stays healthy, I see him as a top eight easy, right? Which for me, that is a no-brainer spot to have. $11 is probably too much from the injury risk, but I can't get anybody else, right? You can't really pick anybody else up that is going to be in that sort of not elite tier, but just below it, I think, potentially, because everyone else has picked up. So nobody wants to trade, you know, nobody wants to trade Mark Andrews for $4. Nobody wants to trade Austin Hooper for $6. Jared Cook for three, right? Like that's what we're looking at on these, you know, on these salaries that these tight ends are going for, is they're so low that it doesn't make any sense to trade them. And it, so there's not a lot of movement in those top tiers. And you know, Travis Kelce can stay at $34 for the remainder of his time in our league. And I couldn't care less. That's way too high of a price for me to pay for him.
Yep.
For any situation.
Yeah. I hear you.
So
hey, let's switch gears here. Let's go to some of our off season. Let's just look at a couple of trades that went through in our league. And let's talk about who we think maybe, you know, in retrospect, as we've gone a little bit further down the line here, who we think maybe got the better end of the deal here. And we can talk some of the players too. So the first one that pops up to me, which I loved for one side, and I mean it's getting better in my brain as we go here. But one of our league mates gave up Tyler Boyd and Darius Slayton for Raheem Mostert, and this was pre Mostert restructuring his contract. So now Mostert's apparently happy. His agents come out and said, "Yep, I'm good." You know, they showed me the money, as they would say. So, now Mostert is looking like he's probably the lead running back, in San Francisco, but the other side of it got a possible up and coming wide receiver in Darius Slayton, as well as maybe the number one with the, you know, the number one receiver in Cincinnati, with Joe Burrow, and as a slot receiver, which, Joe Burrow loves. So where are you at on that?
Well, So when this first happened, I think I sent you a message immediately saying one side got the better deal than the other, very clearly. I'm really unchanged from that. Tyler Boyd in Cincinnati with Joe Burrow, that he has the potential upside of exploding, right? He's a young receiver. I think Cincinnati's going to open it up. Joe Burrow is going to want to sling the ball. I think Tyler AJ Green, everybody says AJ Green's going to come back. Who knows, right? The guy's been up and down for the past however many years. I'm not really high on AJ, but Tyler Boyd is, from a dynasty perspective, is somebody that everyone should target if they can. In our league, I think his salary is fairly low. What is he, $6 maybe? He's going to be cheap. But at the same time, to get him now with Burrow,
15.
he's at 15. Okay, so he must have been around one in his rookie year and just went up from a salary perspective. But anyways, he's young receiver up. I think this is going to be an up and coming offense in Cincinnati. Mixon is going to see hopefully a lot more play in position, which is going to really open up the receiving core as well. Then you pack on Darius Slayton. So Slayton is obviously a young receiver with a young quarterback. I think those two are really going to start to sync up. There's nobody else. I mean, who else is there in New York besides Evan Ingram, right? You've got Golden
Golden
Tate.
State.
Golden Tate's kind of on the end of his career. You've got a couple other Sterling Shepard, I think, is still there maybe. That's gonna take a little bit of receiving away, but Darius Slayton, I think, is the guy of the future in New York, at least at this point. And he's got the most opportunity to really start to sync with Daniel Jones. So those two receivers I thought were are great pickups. I like them both from a dynasty perspective. I don't think they're going to do much this year. Tyler Boyd might. It really depends on how much AJ's in the mix. Darius probably isn't going to do a whole lot as well this year, but I think over the next 2 years, I think you're going to see those two explode. Raheem Mostert, yes, this was pre him shaking hands and kissing cheeks and making up with the San Francisco front office, but that stuff isn't forgotten, right? It's hard for me to see. It's hard for me to see Raheem Mostert in the system that is San Francisco for an extended period of time. That is the best opportunity that he could have possibly had, that they helped sort of build around that running back's play style, which not a lot of offenses do. They sort of have to mold based off of the quarterback, but the Shanahan has a great way of utilizing all of his resources to the best degree possible, and Mostert really isn't going to be effective anywhere else. So, unless I could be totally wrong, but I don't think San Francisco is going to have a long play for Mostert. I'm not super high on him even this year. I know he's going to be the number one in San Francisco, and I know that San Francisco had a fairly good from a running back perspective offense last season.
Number four.
I'm just not very high on San Francisco, or excuse me, on Raheem Mostert. I think San Francisco is going to start to kind of sort of whittle him out of their scheme. So I still think there was a huge tilt. There was a huge slant to the Tyler Boyd, Darius Slayton side versus the Mostert side.
And I'm gonna go the opposite way there. I love the fact that you can get a Raheem Mostert, a guy who could be a right, could be. So I said San Francisco was the number four rushing fantasy football production team last year, and they right they shipped out Burita to Miami. So he's out of the way. They've kind of cleared the way. I don't think oh. What was I don't think is McKinnon still there. They've got a couple other guys kind of in the way, but I think Mostert is clearly the best running back that they have. And they gave him money to appease him. He kind of right, he kind of threw a fit, and they went ahead and gave him some dollar bills. So I think that goes a long way to say, listen, now it wasn't a good look that Kyle Juszczyk was making more money than Raheem Mostert. So they kind of, I mean, they needed to. That was a thing that had to happen. But I'm not a, I like Tyler Boyd, but I'm not a huge Tyler Boyd guy. I'm not going to project him to be, I'm not going to project him to be a stud. I think he had 90 catches last year. That was with Andy Dalton under center, who didn't know where to throw the ball to, so he just threw it to somebody. I think the offense is going to be more efficient and just better with Joe Burrow and the second or third year under Zach Taylor. And they finally realize that Joe Mixon is a beast, so they should turn around and just hand the ball to him. And Darius Slayton is a guy. He's not the future. He's a fifth round pick. He's not the future. The future isn't in New York yet. I think you made the point that you're at. It's Golden Tate is there. Sterling Shepard's there. Evan Ingram's there. Darius Slayton's there. New York is going to draft a receiver in the first or second round next year. I just don't see how they don't spend draft capital at that position, because they don't have a guy, right? Those guys wouldn't be starters on the vast majority of teams. If you look around the league, they certainly wouldn't be number ones. So to say that Darius Slayton is the number one and the future in New York, I think is a bit off base for my liking. And especially if we're looking at the next 2 years, I think Raheem Mostert wins that side of the trade, hands down. And then again, we don't know where these guys are going to be at, in the next 3 years. So from a dynasty perspective, I don't play out more than 2 or 3 years. I'm not looking at these guys as the next 6 years, right? As Dynasty would suggest. I'm looking at the next 2 or 3 years and what could be, or what is most likely to be. So I think the Mostert side got the better end of that deal. And I remember your text, and that's what kind of why I want to bring it up and see if things had changed or anything like that, because of the way that the contract negotiation kind of went down.
Yeah, no, just one quick follow-up on this before we kind of end it. Looking at the team that received Mostert, right? And I think you make a fair point of not looking into the future as much, even though we are a dynasty. The thing that I do worry about, though, is when you trade a running back for two wide receivers, two young wide receivers, for a running back who doesn't have that much playing time left. I don't think a year, a couple years left in the tank. Then you're going to see him start to fizzle out, as all running backs do, with the exception of maybe, I don't know, Adrian Peterson. But you look at the roster that this person traded out of. So he's got Julio for 49, Keenan Allen for 39. Those two guys don't. Again, talking about not much left in the tank. I know that they're probably going to be great again for the next year or two, but after that, what's your future look like? You got Tyler Lockett, who could do some damage this season. That's fair. Jarvis Landry depends on really what Odell's doing, and DJ Chark. DJ Chark is really the only young receiver that you can sort of throw in that category of names that has long-term potential for this roster. So he gave up two very young, untested receivers that have great upside with two very young quarterbacks. So there's potentially, 5 to 8 years of great production with that tandem, potentially, right? Then you look at the running back situation: Chris Carson, Mark Andrews, David Johnson, Raheem Mostert, James White. Right, didn't do really anything for upgrading the status of the running back position. So I totally get what you're saying. I don't think there was much of an upgrade to justify doing that by getting rid of two young, relatively inexpensive players that have potential to, carry your wide receiving core for years to come.
I went after Chark with every inch of my being to try to get him from him, and he would not trade Chark to me. And I'm still mad at you. I know you're going to listen to this, and just know I'm still mad at you.
I don't blame
I do blame him.
him.
Hey, we're bumping into time here. So we've drugged these guys through the mud for almost an hour now. So we'll probably wrap it up here pretty quick. That way you guys can get some of your day back. Let us know kind of what you guys think. I know we got pretty long-winded on tight ends, and that can, I mean, that can happen with any conversation, right? You tear down a road and you start kind of piecing it all together, and then you can talk about tight ends for an hour, which brings us back to the main point of why we wanted to start a fantasy football podcast, right? We know that we can talk about this stuff for you know, time on end, but it'd be really helpful if you guys can reach out and let us know what you guys want to hear about or what we can do to kind of up the content a little bit here, and let us know what would make this podcast a little bit more enjoyable for you guys. So hit us up. I have my Twitter on. Just so you know, this is the first social media that I've had in the past 8 years. So I put Twitter on there. Go ahead and hit it up. If I don't get right back at you, just know that it's because I'm social media literate, but I'll get better at it. So just let us know what you think, and we will probably talk to you guys next week. So Brandon, you got any parting words?
No, I don't even like talking about tight ends, so I'm glad that we went as long as we did.
Good.
No, yeah, as Matt said, right? We want to do something fun. We're gonna talk about stuff. We're gonna get long-winded. Tell us when we're talking about something for too long that you guys don't have any interest in. If it doesn't do you any good, it doesn't really do us any good to talk about it. But if you're having fun, I had fun. I think making these is going to be a blast. We'll start to have a couple of shtick things as we move along, right? Some of the ideas that we talked about were coffee and whiskey. You know, if we did a morning podcast, coffee. If we did a evening podcast, some whiskey. So give us some thoughts on that. If there's any other things that you want to see us throw in there.
Yeah, that's all we got for this week. We'll probably get another one out here in the next, you know, 5 or 6 days. Again, reach out, let us know. We'll talk to you guys later.
That's a wrap. Thanks.